Alright everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and I'm back with another video. This is the Grim Articles Show. And of course, it's just me tonight, and no alcohol, because, you know, I've been feeling pretty sick and trying to get better. If it's not my sinuses, it's my stomach. It's just been a rough fall. I guess we're getting into fall. That's why my sinuses are like, oh, let's fuck up. And, you know, it's always a good time for me when you have change of seasons. Anyway, let's go ahead and just... Well, hold on. Let me do the housekeeping first. First thing I need to do is, once again, we've got a shill Ken's GoFundMe. Again, Ken's been having a pretty hard time. He has gotten back on YouTube. There hasn't been a lot of fighting or anything. I haven't seen the squishy cat or any of her peers jump on him. He did the Sophie Long thing without issue. It seems like he's doing a good job trying to get himself, you know, grounded again. And again, it's about 7,000. He still needs 10,000, guys. So if you can donate what you got to help him out, remember, this man was wrongfully fired, I guess we could say, from his position in mental health. We do need him. He is somebody in mental health that I value. I think actually gives a shit about people, especially kids. And we all know most of society doesn't fucking give a shit about children, especially young boys. So we need somebody like that. And if you could donate what you got, I'd like to see him back in mental health, because that seems to be his field. That seems to be his passion and his strong suit. So help him out. And, of course, we have our sponsor, Spinning Robot Pussy. That's www.spinningrobotpussy.com. You can go grab one of those when they're available very shortly. I think Revy said that the orders or pre-orders are coming in. So that means they're going to start selling regular stock. And hopefully, you know, new innovations come from there. And he, you know, maybe even finds a way to put that little hentai moans and stuff in there. You never know. There might be a lot of cool things coming from that. Anyway, now that that's out of the way, I guess you could say, I'm going to go ahead and start with our first article. Now, this article is from Fox News, you know, so just beware. Some people are not 100% trusting of Fox News, I understand. And this was published July 25th, so it's not that old. Representative Ronnie Jackson, ex-White House doc, predicts that Biden will be forced to resign. Jackson said that Biden needs a cognitive exam, the results of which should be made... Oh, you know what? I think we covered this one already. Yeah, okay. Well, my bad. We won't cover that one then. Okay, well, my bad. You know, I've got so many articles, it's hard to keep track of what we have and have not covered. So, apologies for wasting your time there. Let's go right to SciTech Daily and talk about a good old, scientific article, I guess you could say. This one, it's more my subject because I'm interested in how the brain chemicals work and the science of love and attraction and how you can manipulate that shit. I'm one of those kind of people. It says, feel-good brain chemical dopamine can be willfully controlled. Now, this is very interesting. Neuroscientists show that mice can learn to manipulate random dopamine impulses for reward. From the thrill of hearing an ice cream truck approaching to the spikes of pleasure while sipping a fine wine, the neurological messenger known as dopamine has been popularly described as the brain's feel-good chemical related to reward and pleasure, a ubiquitous neurotransmitter that carries signals between brain cells. Dopamine, among its many functions, is involved in multiple aspects of cognitive processing. The chemical messenger has been extensively studied from the perspective of external cues or deterministic signals. Instead, University of California, San Diego researchers recently set out to investigate less understood aspects related to spontaneous impulses of dopamine. Their results, published on July the 23rd in the journal Current Biology, have shown that mice can willfully manipulate these random dopamine pulses. Rather than only occurring when presented with pleasurable or reward-based expectations, UC San Diego graduate student Conrad Fu led research that found that the neocortex in mice is flooded with unpredictable impulses of dopamine that occur approximately once per minute. Working with colleagues at UC San Diego and the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York, Fu investigated whether mice are in fact aware of these impulses, documented in the lab through molecular and optical imaging techniques, are actually occurring. The researchers devised a feedback scheme in which mice on a treadmill received a reward if they showed they were able to control the impromptu dopamine signals. Not only were these mice aware of these dopamine impulses that data revealed, but the results confirmed that they learned to anticipate and volitionally act upon a portion of them. Critically, mice learned to reliably elicit dopamine impulses prior to receiving a reward, the researchers note in the paper. These effects reversed when the reward was removed. We posit that spontaneous dopamine impulses may serve as a salient cognitive event in behavioral planning. The researchers say the study opens a new dimension in the study of dopamine and brain dynamics. They now intend to extend this research to explore if and how unpredictable dopamine events drive foraging, which is an essential aspect of seeking sustenance, finding a mate, and as a social behavior in colonizing new home bases. We further conjecture that an animal's sense of spontaneous dopamine impulses may motivate it to search and forage in the absence of known reward predictive stimuli, the researchers noted. In their efforts to control dopamine, the researchers clarified that dopamine appears to invigorate rather than initiate motor behavior. This started as a serendipitous finding by a talented and curious graduate student with an intellectual support from a wonderful group of colleagues, said study senior co-author David Kleinfield, a professor in the Department of Physics, Division of Physical Sciences, and Section of Neurobiology, Division of Biological Sciences. As an unanticipated result, we spent many long days expanding on the original study and, of course, performing control experiments to verify the claims. These led to the current conclusions. Well, that's very interesting. Let's see here. We've got another one here now. Now, the Wall Street Journal has been really talking a lot about, basically this article says the U.S. population growth grinds to a halt, which we really have covered before, and I have a better article for that, so we will continue to go down. Here's one. Scientists finished the human genome at last. Now, this is the New York Times, and those writers like to get paid by word count. So, there's probably a good possibility that that'll have like a million fucking words. Hopefully not, because I'm not reading a million paragraphs again. Let's see here. Okay. Let's see how long this person wants to go on. Carl Zimmer, let's see what you're doing. So far, I don't see nothing. It seems to end it. No, it's just... Yeah. Apparently... Oh, yep, it's gonna try to tell me. Yep. No, I'm not going to pay $1 a week to read this. So, I'm just going to look for this on Archive, which a lot of journalists are upset calling Archive like a fucking far-right website now. I don't know. It's stupid. Okay. Well, he wrote a lot. I'll keep reading, and if it gets boring, we'll just stop. Scientists finished the human genome at last. The complete genome uncovered more than 100 new genes that are probably functional and many new variants that may be linked to diseases. 2 decades after the draft sequence of the human genome was unveiled to great fanfare, a team of 99 scientists has finally deciphered the entire thing. It only took 99 scientists. They have filled, well, I mean, to do the last bit of it, I'm pretty sure that more scientists than that have covered, you know, from, what was it, 95 to 2021. It took us a long time to do this, folks. They have filled in vast gaps and corrected a long list of errors in the previous versions, giving us a new view of our DNA. The consortium has posted 6 papers online in recent weeks, which they described the full genome. These hard-sought data, now under review by scientific journals, would give scientists a deeper understanding of how DNA influences risks of disease, the scientists say, and how cells keep it neatly organized, chromosomes instead of molecular tangles. For example, the researchers have uncovered more than 100 new genes that may be functional and have identified millions of genetic variations between people. Some of those differences probably play a role in diseases. For Nicholas Alternose, a postdoctoral researcher at the University of California who worked on the team, the view of the complete human genome feels something like the close-up pictures of Pluto from the New Horizons space probe. You could see every crater, you could see every color from something that we only had the blurriest understanding of before, he said. This has just been an absolute dream come true. Experts who were not involved in the project said it would enable scientists to explore the human genome in much greater detail. Large chunks of the genome that had been simply blank are now deciphered so clearly that scientists can start studying them in earnest. The fruit of this sequencing effect is amazing, said Yukiko Yamashita, a developmental biologist at the Whitehead Institute of Biomedical Research at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. While scientists have known for decades that genes were spread across 23 pairs of chromosomes, these strange worm-like microscopic structures remain largely a mystery. By the late 70s, scientists had gained the ability to pinpoint a few individual human genes and decode their sequence, but their tools are so crude that hunting down a single gene could take up an entire career. Wow. Toward the end of the 20th century, an international network of geneticists decided to try to sequence all the DNA in our chromosomes. The Human Genome Project was an audacious undertaking, given how much there was to sequence. Scientists knew that twin strands of DNA in our cells contain roughly 3 billion pairs of letters, a text long enough to fill hundreds of books. Wow. When the team began its work, the best technology the scientists could use was scientists could use sequenced bits of DNA just a few dozen letters or bases long. Researchers were left to put them together like the pieces of a vast jigsaw puzzle. To assemble the puzzle, they looked for fragments with identical ends, meaning that they came from overlapping portions of the genome. It took years for them to gradually assemble the sequence fragments into larger swaths. The White House announced in 2000 that scientists had finished the first draft of the genome, and details of the project were published the following year. So I was a bit wrong. I said 95, but it seems like it was 2000 when they'd finished at least the first draft and everybody was talking about it. But long stretches of the genome remain unknown while scientists struggled to figure out where millions of other bases belonged. It turned out that the genome was a very hard puzzle to put together from small pieces. Many of our genes exist as multiple copies that are nearly identical to each other. Sometimes the different copies carry out different jobs. Other copies, known as pseudogenes, are disabled by mutations. A short fragment of DNA from one gene might fit just as well into the others. And genes only make up a small percentage of the genome. Wow! The rest of it can be even more baffling! That's very interesting. Now, there is a line there, but I'm not going to get into that. I mean, what I mean is there's another link for that. Much of the genome is made up of virus-like stretches of DNA that exist largely just to make new copies of themselves that get inserted back into the genome. Now, that is fascinating. So you're telling me that some of the human genome actually works like a virus. It's very, very fascinating. In the early 2000s, scientists get a little better at putting together the genome puzzle from its tiny pieces. They made more fragments, read them more accurately, and just developed new computer programs to assemble them into bigger chunks of the genome. Periodically, researchers would unveil the latest, best draft of the human genome, known as the reference genome. Scientists used that reference genome as a guide for their own sequencing efforts. For example, clinical geneticists would catalog disease-causing mutations by comparing genes from patients to the reference genome. The newest reference genome came out in 13. It was a lot better than the first draft, but it was a long way from complete. 8% of it was simply blank. There's basically an entire human chromosome that had gone missing, said Michael Schatz, a computational biologist at Johns Hopkins University. In 2019, two scientists, Adam Filippi, a computational biologist at the National Human Genome Research Institute, and Karen Miga, a geneticist at the University of California, Santa Cruz, founded the Telomere to Telomere Consortium to complete the genome. Dr. Filippi admitted that part of his motivation for such an audacious project was that the missing gaps annoyed him. He literally had OCD over these fucking missing gaps. They were really just bugging me, he said. Yeah. You take a beautiful landscape puzzle, pull out 100 pieces and look at it. That's very bothersome to a perfectionist. This guy gets 100% in like all his fucking games. Like that guy gets every fucking trophy. Like, I'm glad people like that exist. I'm not that kind of person, but it's people like that that are actually fucking useful because they solve the human genome. So if people say, hey, your achievements are bullshit, well, you may be like this guy that solves the human genome, but largely in the game, they are bullshit. Don't at me. Dr. Filippi and Dr. Miga put out a call for scientists to join them to finish the puzzle. They ended up with 99 scientists working directly on sequencing the human genome, and dozens more pitching in to make sense of the data. The researchers worked remotely through the pandemic, coordinating their efforts over Slack, a messaging app. It was a surprisingly nice ant colony, Dr. Miga said. The consortium took advantage of new machines that can read stretches of DNA reaching tens of thousands of bases long. The researchers also invented techniques to figure out where particularly mysterious repeating sequences belonged in a genome. All told, the scientists added or fixed more than 200 million base pairs in the reference genome. They can now say with confidence that the human genome measures 3.5 billion base pairs long. Good lord. With those new sequences of DNA, the scientists discovered more than 2,000 new genes. Most appear to be disabled by mutations. Wow. But 115 of them look as if they can produce proteins, the function of which scientists may need years to figure out. The consortium now estimates that the human genome contains 19,969 protein-coding genes. With a complete genome fully assembled, the researchers could take a better look at the variation in DNA from one person to the next. They discovered more than 2 million new spots in the genome where people differ. Using the new genome also helped them to avoid identifying disease-linked mutations where none actually exist. It's a great advance for the field, said Dr. Midhat Farooqi. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name, sorry. The director of molecular oncology at Children's Mercy, a hospital in Kansas City, Montana, who is not involved in this project. Dr. Farooqi has started using the genome for his research into rare childhood diseases, aligning DNA from his patients against the newly filled gaps to search for mutations. Switching to the new genome may be a challenge for many clinical labs, however. They'll have to shift all of their information about the links between genes and diseases to a new map of the genome. There would be a big effort, but it will take a couple years, said Dr. Sharon Plon, a medical geneticist at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. Dr. Ordonez plans on using the complete genome to explore a particularly mysterious region in each chromosome known as the centromere. Instead of storing genes, centromeres anchor proteins at more chromosomes around that move chromosomes around the cell as it divides. The centromere region contains thousands of repeated segments of DNA. In their first look, Dr. Alternose and his colleagues were struck by how different centromere regions can be from one person to another. That observation suggests that centromeres have been evolving rapidly as mutations insert new pieces of repeating DNA into the regions of or cut other pieces out. While some of this repeating DNA may play a role in pulling chromosomes apart, the researchers have also found new segments, some of them millions of bases long, that don't appear to be involved. We don't know what they're doing, Dr. Ordonez said. Isn't that interesting? Like, there's parts of your DNA that we don't know what the fuck they're doing. They could be turning us all into, like, fucking, I don't know, G-virus mutation monster thingies over time. You know, we don't know. We have no idea what happens. And that's one reason why this RNA, DNA manipulation virus thing, our vaccine thing, kind of worries me. Because, like, we don't know what that fucking shit does to these genes they've never heard of. Like, these chromosomes, they have no idea what the fuck these millions of bases long are doing. They don't know. So, why would you trust this weird vaccine, like, that hasn't been fully fucking tested, to maybe trigger shit that scientists never knew? Oh, well, we didn't know it was gonna turn them into fucking monsters. Wow. And all of a sudden we hear about, like, all these weird fucking stories that we think are Florida man. Like, man devours wife and children. Well, he was fine a couple days ago. Then he had, like, his COVID shot. He was telling everybody how great it was. And all of a sudden it was just the worst display of cannibalism I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, and he hopped out the window, apparently, because it's completely broken, and there's blood stains everywhere, and bits of fur on the ground. It's like he turned into a fucking werewolf or something. Well, I didn't know we had a werewolf gene that would be hit with the fucking COVID vaccine. Like, we thought it was fine. You know, I'm not saying you're gonna turn into, like, a werewolf or something, but you never know. You know, if they don't know, they could do anything. They could turn you into a slime monster. He was great until he absorbed his wife and children. Like, now he's just walking around trying to absorb everybody. Bullets aren't effective. And then they pull the tanks, and then the fucking missiles that come out of the tanks just completely absorbed by the slime monster. Just, we don't know how to stop it. It's like the real blob. And Rob Zombie's like, well, I didn't realize they were gonna make the blob before I had a chance to fuck it up. Because, yeah, he was actually in talks to remake the blob a long time ago. So, yeah, we could get, like, a real-life blob situation. Because we didn't know. Oh, we don't know what these genes do. So go on and take the thing that changes your DNA. You know, even slightly. We don't know what it does. Just more reason to give it a try. But now the empty zones of the genome are filled in. Dr. Audenose and his colleagues can study them up close. I'm really excited moving forward to see all the things we can discover, he said. Well, that is pretty fucking fascinating. But yeah, just go ahead and take your shot, man. Come on, man, take your shot. Here's something interesting. Neuroscience news. Screen time can make you feel sick. Here are some ways to manage your cyber sickness. Now, maybe some of you guys might not think this is viable, but a lot of us do look at screens, and it might be important to know the effects on the body. Many people report feeling nausea and dizziness similar to motion sickness when looking at their cell phones or computers for too long. Researchers investigate why some experience cyber sickness and provide advice on managing symptoms. Now, this was taken from The Conversation, which is largely left-leaning, has been in recent era, I guess you could say. Recent years, whatever you want to call this era of woke. But maybe this is useful. We'll find out. Do you ever feel like the light of your computer screen is burrowing into your head and making your head burrowing into your eyes and making your head pulse? Or feel dizzy or nauseous after looking at your phone? While you might think these sensations are just eye strain or fatigue from looking at your screen too long, they're actually symptoms of a condition called cyber sickness. These issues may seem like a necessary evil with the rise of work from home, remote learning, and days spent endlessly scrolling online. But I can assure you, as a researcher in human-computer interaction specializing in cyber sickness, that there are ways to anticipate and avoid feeling sick from your screens. Now, unfortunately, this writer is not credited, so I'm not sure who wrote this. Hopefully, it'll tell me at the end of the article. What is cyber sickness? Cyber sickness refers to a cluster of symptoms that occur in the absence of physical motion, similar to motion sicknesses. These symptoms fall into three categories: nausea, oculomotor issues, and general disorientation. Oculomotor symptoms like eye strain, fatigue, and headaches involve overworking the nerve that controls eye movement. Disorientation can manifest as dizziness and vertigo, and several cyber sickness symptoms such as difficulty concentrating and blurred vision overlap categories. These issues can persist for hours and affect sleep quality. You know, they say you're supposed to turn off all electronic devices 30 minutes before you go to bed, because that eye strain can keep you up. The bright lights on your phone. There are some ways you can manage before I even get into this article. First thing, don't turn your brightness all the way up on your phone or your computer devices. Ken Jennings talked about this. There's an app called Flux that you can get for your computer, and it's really good. It'll actually change your computer. It might make things a little more red, but it basically makes it so that you go to sleep and your computer doesn't keep you awake. Now, on the flip side, if you work nights, you may want to change the timing so that you're more awake at night and sleep during the day. So you can do that too. Also, there are apps on your phone that will do it. The same kind of thing. I don't think I had to pay for it, but check those out. And Windows actually seems to do it on its own, so check that out as well. I'm pretty sure Linux would have something. Also, if you really want to not get the dopamine hit, now this is just something that was suggested. Try using your phone in full grayscale mode. A lot of people are going to be against that, but they say it completely derives you of the bright colors that the dopamine hit seems to provide. So try that. I've heard full grayscale can do wonders for the brain. So give that a shot. It's not something I really like. I prefer to have my phone on fairly low, but not too low. So check that one out. See what that does. But you should never have it at super ultra bright. But it says, people can experience symptoms of cyber sickness through everyday devices like computers, phones, and TV. For instance, Apple released a parallax effect on iPhone lock screens in 2013 that made the background image seem like it floated or shifted when a user moved their phone around, which many people found extremely uncomfortable. As it turned out, that's because this triggered cyber sickness symptoms. Parallax scrolling on websites where a background image remains static while foreground content moves as you scroll can also elicit these symptoms. Okay, there isn't total agreement among researchers about why people experience cyber sickness. One prevailing idea, sensory conflict theory, hypothesizes that it's from a mismatch of information perceived by parts of the body that regulate vision and balance. Your eyes receive information that tells them you're moving even though your body isn't. Everyday technology design can trigger this conflict between visual perception and physical experience. Cyber sickness in virtual and augmented reality. Now, this is something I want them to really kind of work on to fix, because I think that it inhibits, as TFM said, inhibits the VR world. TFM said he had a lot of issues with virtual reality. It was a lot for him. He enjoyed it, but he said you couldn't do it for long periods of time. And augmented reality as well. Because, I mean, again, how are you going to have your virtual waifu when you only can spend a few minutes, a few hours a day with her? Maybe that's, like, the anticipation factor, but, you know, it can be a really, like, a drag. It can be a real bummer. Like, yeah, I'm being sick from spending time with my waifu. This could be a real big issue, guys. This could be a problem. They need to really work on this and fix this the best they can. But VR refers to, refers to technology that entirely blocks your view of the real world and replaces it with an immersive artificial environment. Okay, I buy that. It's widely commercially available through popular gaming platforms like Facebook's Oculus and the Sony PlayStation VR. VR can result in severe levels of nausea that increase with duration of use. It can. It doesn't always. It depends on the person. This can make certain applications and games unusable for many individuals. AR, on the other hand, overlays a simulated environment onto the real world. These can include head-mounted device that still allow you to see what's in front of you, or something like Pokemon Go on your phone or tablet. It can go towards more severe oculomotor strain. You get like headaches and eye aches, which you can get that from playing video games too long too. Even if you haven't used VR AR devices before, chances are you will within the next 10 years. Yes. A rise in the popularity of AR and VR will likely trigger a rise in cyber sickness. Well, you need to create something to kind of fix it. I don't know. Does Pepto-Bismol help with the nausea? I mean, come on now. If this is something we need to work on, it's going to be part of our lives, then it is up to you guys to fix it, you know? Market research firm Research and Markets, well, at least they're honest, estimates that adoption of these technologies for work, education, and entertainment will grow over 60% and reach over 900 billion by 2027. Yes. Everybody will have a goddamn waifu in his bondo. And you need to make it so that people can handle this shit without getting sick. Like, you know, instead of all these opiate pills, like, create pills for that. Having problems talking to your waifu? Take Stomach Hurt No More. One pill a day, and you can spend as much time with your waifu as you needed. I'm 50. And it really fucking hurt to spend time with my waifu. Like, they would never do that if he would not be able to say. I don't know. Will we get F-bombs in medical commercials within the next 10 years? It really fucking hurt to spend time with my waifu. But when I got stomach hurt no more, my stomach stopped hurting, and now every day is a waifu day. So, tell your doctor, demand your doctor, pick your doctor up by the throat, and demand stomach hurt no more, so you too can spend time with your waifu. There we go. Okay. While cyber sickness symptoms may initially appear benign, they can have enduring effects lasting up to 24 hours after device use. Yeah, and we need to fix that. This may seem like a big deal at first, but these lingering symptoms could affect your ability to function in ways that could prove dangerous. For instance, symptoms like severe headache, eye strain, or dizziness could affect your coordination and attention. If these side effects persist while you're operating a vehicle, it could lead to a car accident. Pick me. I know how to solve that. AI cars. You don't have to worry about not being able to drive a car with coordination issues if you're not driving the car. We gotta post that meme where the black guy points to his head. Yep. Modern problems require modern solutions. AI cars. Like, no problem. Oh, I got a headache, but it's okay because this robot is driving my car or forklift. Now, yeah, I know forklift drivers, oh, that's extremely dangerous. But when we get to the point, when we have the robot, you know, just carry it, and all you gotta do, even if you got a headache, is push that fucking stop button, that big red stop button. Okay, hold on. We don't need you to lift that guy up. We need you to lift that pallet up. And then you say, hey, no, that is an employee, not a pallet. And it said, oh, my apologies. We will go to this pallet then. There, you've made your money and you saved a man from being lifted by his vest pretty high up, wondering what the fuck's going on. Or, what was it? The German safety video. Yeah, that's like an instance of the German safety video pretty much there. It's unclear whether the user, software company, or some other party would be responsible for injuries potentially caused by device use and cyber sickness symptoms. Not much is currently known about how chronic cyber sickness affects daily life. Just as there is extreme variability on who is more prone to motion sickness, with some up to 10,000 times more at risk, some people may be more prone to cyber sickness than others. Evidence suggests that women, those who don't play video games often, and people with poor balance may experience more severe cyber sickness. Well, I tell you one thing they won't have problems with. Cyber dickness, am I right? Am I right, gentlemen? Because they got that cyber fucking Sibian dildo, and it's paired with fucking Jason Momoa. Yeah, they're going to have cyber dickness problems for a long time. Dealing with cyber sickness symptoms. If you are struggling with cyber sickness symptoms because you're using your computer or phone for longer periods, there are ways to help relieve the discomfort. Blue light glasses. Blue light glasses? Just get a blue light program. Don't fucking buy these expensive ass glasses. Zooming in on a screen or using larger font sizes may also help reduce eye strain and make daily work more sustainable. If you're interested in trying VR and AR applications but are prone to motion sickness, warning indicators like Oculus comfort ratings can help you know what to expect. Oh, I don't like the way that was written. It should have been a semicolon there. Always make sure to visually calibrate devices so your eyes are as comfortable as possible. And use devices only in open spaces to minimize the risk of injury if you get dizzy or lose your balance. Yeah, TFM said you really need to have an open space because you'll end up knocking all your shit over. It's not even like getting dizzy. It's like, oh shit, I didn't know that was there. And then like your expensive ass thing falls to the ground and breaks. And you're like, oh my god, I was only trying to punch that guy. Yeah, you punched him all right. Take breaks if you feel any discomfort. The work from home movement has grown as a result of the COVID pandemic. Many people have replaced 9-to-5 commutes with sweatpants, bedhead, and Zoom meetings. Though the convenience is undeniable, and this will also lead to the AR-VR world, I said, because, dude, look, with these ladies, be honest. If a woman can do all her sexy things without having to get out of bed and put on makeup, she will. She will be your hot little waifu and look like absolute fucking ass because she can. She's like, oh, I don't have to get up out of bed or fucking, like, I'd be in my pajamas. Fuck working out. I don't have to do that because I have this little VR waifu model, this AR waifu model, and I can just fuck guys and get this little cyber dickness ran through my vagina. It's going to be great, you know, for these ladies. They're going to get even more entitled because they don't even have to get up out of bed. They can do like the girls I was talking about in the last video where they just look like ass, but you see them, oh my god, she's so beautiful, I'm going to fucking simp. China just passed a law, though, that said, hey, you can't simp anymore. Yeah, that's probably something I'm going to cover later, because right now all I have is like a feat. Unless somebody wants to find that live, post an article about the CCP basically making it illegal for people to support influencers and support TikTok people. They basically made it illegal to simp. So if somebody wants to post that, I will cover that like right now. If you guys can post that, because that will definitely go with what I'm talking about here. But America won't do that, and a lot of the other West won't do that. So basically, you're going to continue to see this trend where Bedhead Becky basically gets on fucking Instagram. Oh my god, she's so beautiful. And keep in mind, dude, these girls, like, they're straight putting fat injections into their breasts and their ass to make them look like they have skinny waists. But they have, oh, look at my anime titties. Look how big they are. Okay, I'll admit, it is a very good illusion. I mean, come on. It's pretty amazing to see these girls getting thick after they were fat. But the problem is, it's, you know, again, it's fake. Like, no woman has fucking hips and breasts like that normally. So it's, again, another thing where they're trying to be your anime thick girl waifu. I'm sorry, the women are doing this shit. They've been doing this shit since fucking women were women and they had to start appealing. Oh, but we're not appealing to the male gaze. Of course you're not. Because if you weren't, you would still be fat. You wouldn't be taking that fat injections and putting them into your butts and your fucking boobs. You wouldn't be doing that. You wouldn't be trying to put an anime girl filter on. Look at my big anime titties. And yes, it's work again, it's working on the waifu guys, because I fucking see it. I see all the anime profile guys, all this stuff. Oh my god, this is amazing. It's almost a perfect mix of 2D and 3D. I've seen that shit. I'm telling you guys, don't fall for this illusion. You're gonna fall for it. So many men are gonna fall for it. So many men are gonna end up fucking men that pretend to be women, or trans people that can't get laid and become women online, or and there's gonna be so many food of fantasies. It's gonna be a mess, folks. I see a mess. It's like, you know, I used to work in maintenance, and a lot of times I could see when there was gonna be a mess. So it's like, oh, that's gonna be a fucking mess. That is a mess waiting to happen. It's right here, it's a mess. It's like if you're a highway worker and you see all these cars and it's like that's gonna be a fucking mess. That is a mess waiting to happen. There's no fucking way all those cars are gonna get by without a goddamn 50 car pileup on that road. That's what we're getting into, a goddamn 50 car pileup. The mess hasn't happened, but it's coming. There is a mess coming, folks. So get ready for it. I see it. TFM doesn't have a crystal ball, but goddammit, I think I do. And I see the mess. The mess is on the horizon. The question is, will you fall for the mess? Will you become part of the mess? Will you end up having sexual relations with a man who uses a VR/AR waifu character and not even know it? Because goddammit, urges and sexual hormones. Oh my god, she was so beautiful. And the guy's like, oh, I can't believe I had sex with this guy. And you're not gonna know, and no one's gonna know, and Black Mirror is gonna be right. And everything I fucking talk about is going to happen. And then I get to do my I told you so dance. Like you check from, what was that? I think it was TFM's last video where he literally posted Celestina dancing I told you so. The day the Discord got nuked, I still remember that fucking video. Then I get to do it. I get to post my I told you so dance. But don't let cyber sickness get you down. As researchers continue to find ways to mitigate and prevent cyber sickness across all devices, people may one day be able to enjoy advancements and innovative technologies without feeling Disney. Dizzy, not Disney. That hasn't happened yet, but I believe that may happen eventually too, when we go in the Disney world that they create. Because you know Disney's going to create their own fucking VR world. You know it's happening. And that's what we've got there. Now I'm going to check and see if somebody did post that article. Because we are going to go into detail about this. I'm going to do this bonus article here. If we have it. If we have it, I'm looking. No. Nobody's posted it. But anyway, all that I can tell you is, again, yeah, China banned simping, pretty much. So, like, yeah, that's, I see posting, but I don't see posting in the article room. So, yeah, it is what it is there. But let's see what's going on here. Do I have anything in the Grimshow chats? Let's see. No, nothing in the Grimshow chats. Okay, so we will continue. I'm going to go up a little bit and talk about some other issues. We have kind of some world news to talk about here. Just fucking happened. And of course, well, it hasn't fucking happened. This happened a while back. I'm surprised I didn't cover this. Why did they? Oh, it was updated. Okay, that's what it was. This was updated. Okay. So basically, NPR just updated an article about, after being silent for decades, Japan now speaks up about Taiwan and angers China. Seoul, South Korea. Japan is undergoing a remarkable shift in its stance on one of the most contentious issues in Asia, Taiwan. China, mainland China and Taiwan split during Civil War in 1949, and Beijing has vowed to unify with a self-governing island by force if necessary. The Biden administration is counting on help from its allies, especially Japan, to deter such a move. For decades, Japan considered the Taiwan issue too politically sensitive to speak out about publicly. Japan's military is focused on defense of its own territory and has no expeditionary forces to fight overseas. I thought Japan wasn't allowed to have a military. But in recent weeks, top Japanese officials have said that if mainland China attacks the island, Japan should join U.S. in defending it. Oh, Lord. We have to protect Taiwan as a democratic company, Japan's Deputy Defense Minister Yoshihide Nakayama said in a conference in June. Japan's shift in thinking comes as China has stepped up pressure on Taiwan, including sending fighter jets and warships around the island. But the bolder talk could also be driven by further moves from China. Yoji Koda, a former commander of Japan's Maritime Self-Defense Force fleet, I guess they do have a military, says he believes Tokyo's trust in Beijing is eroding. He points to China's rapid military buildup, its crushing of dissent in Hong Kong, and its flouting of international court ruling that rejected China's claim over the South China Sea. Tensions have also mounted between Japan and China over disputed territory known as the Senkaku Islands in Japan and the Diaoyu Islands in China. As neighbors, Koda says, we need to say what we think. The Japanese Constitution rejects using force to resolve international disputes, but after 2015 reforms, Japanese law allows the military to use force when an attack on a foreign country threatens Japan's survival. The law would also let Japan deploy its forces to provide logistical support to foreign militaries, ensuring Japan's security. In early July, Deputy Prime Minister Taro Aso reiterated that any crisis over Taiwan should be resolved through dialogue. But speaking in a fundraising event, he said if a major problem took place in Taiwan, it would not be too much to say that it could relate to a survival-threatening situation for Japan. The defense ministry issued a white paper in July that said, stabilizing the situation surrounding Taiwan is important for Japan's security, and said Japan should monitor the situation with a sense of crisis. These statements signal that Japan is building an argument that an attack on Taiwan could meet Japan's conditions for activating its military, analysts said. It's that public connection now with Taiwan, that is the part that's new, says Jeffrey Hornung, a political scientist at Rand Corps. Japan's official policy still recognizes the authorities in Beijing, not Taipei, as China's legitimate government. And China and Japan are major trading partners. That has not changed, but Japan's new messaging has irked Beijing, which has criticized it as dangerous. The Chinese Foreign Ministry has repeatedly said that China won't let anyone stand in the way of its efforts to unify with Taiwan. It is quite long. It is quite long here. But basically, I guess you could say that they're coming up towards war. They're thinking about sending troops. And of course, they're ending it by saying Japan should insist on avoiding war. Kyoji Yanagisawa, a former deputy defense minister, acknowledges that Japan can't avoid involvement. As long as the U.S. military uses Japanese bases to launch attacks, Japan will certainly be affected in the event of an emergency in Taiwan, he says. Sooner or later, a Taiwan emergency would turn into a Japan emergency. The problem, he says, is that Japanese officials are now thinking more about how to win a conflict than how to avoid one in the first place. Uh-oh. He believes Japan's government now appears to have completely sided with the U.S. in its dispute with China. But he cautions that the more that ties between Beijing and Washington deteriorate, the more Tokyo needs to keep open lines of communication to both governments. Given its position, he argues, Japan should insist that the U.S. avoid anything that could lead to war. At the same time, Japan should insist on the same from China. But Koda, a retired vice admiral, argues that Japan must also prepare for a worst-case scenario. He argues that the U.S. and Japan, he expects the U.S. and Japan to draft an operational plan for a Taiwan conflict within the next year or so. If Japan fails to do so, Koda says, the Japanese government would be called the most stupid government in Japanese history. Wow. Perhaps not now, he adds, but by historians and strategists in centuries to come. Damn. Not looking good. Not looking good. Let's see here, though. We've got a little more to cover here. Now, there is one article I did want to cover. Let me just make sure. I mean, you guys know about the high-end gaming PCs, so I'm not going to go ahead and do that. Now that's very interesting. Okay. Now this is kind of interesting. This is about bodybuilding. Something I like, obviously, with women, and I mean I like the sport in general. Big biceps, toned abs, and cut calves. It's what society deems as the perfectly sculpted body, but is it always healthy? Striving to this ideal, as bodybuilders and weightlifters often do, has the potential to cause serious consequences on a psychological level, experts say. Who are these experts? Oh, we're about to find out. Research has shown that sports and activities that have an aesthetic component to them, where the way one appears is part of how one is being evaluated or judged, tend to have higher rates of eating disorders, says Dr. Sari Shepherd, a sports psychologist specializing in eating disorders. Not only higher than in the general population, but higher than even in other sports where the rates are already high. While there's nothing inherently wrong with wanting to get in shape, the kind of perfectionism that is required in sports like bodybuilding is one risk factor in developing these issues, Shepherd says. It is a sport a lot of people find exciting and engaging and motivating, but you just need to make sure overall that it's not beginning to affect your quality of life or your mental health, she says. Well, that's with everything. Bodybuilders or weightlifters run the risk of falling into the category of orthorexia, which is someone is unhealthily obsessed with being healthy, explains Dr. Elizabeth Wassenaar, regional medical director at the Eating Recovery Center. They are really preoccupied with eating food or engaging in activities that it feels like that will help drive them towards health, and then paradoxically actually end up becoming more unwell, she says. A gym goer who struggles with this may think that if they work out enough and build enough muscle, they would be in peak health, but what happens if they're never satisfied? That's the kind of crux of the illness. It's never enough, Wassenaar adds, explaining that body dysmorphia can also be at play. One specific type of body dysmorphia is seen among bodybuilders as muscle dysmorphia, which has also been referred to as bigorexia or reverse anorexia. The American Psychological Association defines muscle dysmorphia as a form of body dysmorphia characterized by chronic dissatisfaction by one's muscularity and the perception that one's body is inadequate and undesirable, although objective observers would disagree with such an assessment. The condition often leads to excessive exercising, steroid abuse, and eating disorders, according to the APA. That doesn't mean everyone you see at the gym lifting weights has an eating disorder. Going to the gym doesn't cause the eating disorder, but when the preoccupation with an ideal body shape or weight becomes someone's driving force, or when there's an overemphasis placed on one shape or weight, then that can create a climate that contributes to disordered eating, Shepherd says. White often goes unseen. Wassenaar explains it can be difficult for people to recognize they have a problem with bodybuilding because these body ideals are reinforced by our society that values the appearance of fitness. The reinforcement is amplified on social media where people have access to a constant stream of imagery and often find themselves making comparisons. True. We live in a culture where eating disorders thrive because of the messages we're exposed to, says Claire Misko, head of youth outreach to the National Eating Disorders Association, or NEDA. Social media heightens that exposure. Another reason it goes unnoticed is due to the nature of body image distortions, which don't allow the person to see themselves how they really are. From the outside, it may look like somebody is fairly muscular because they spend a lot of time lifting weights when they look in the mirror. They may not see themselves as appearing healthy or fit, Wassenaar says. Sometimes they think they will have much smaller muscles than they do, and so they keep trying to look a certain way. And despite eating disorders being among the deadliest mental illnesses, second only to opioid overdose, athletes may be less likely to seek treatment for an eating disorder due in part to stigma, according to the National Association of Anorexia Nervosa and Associated Disorders. Bodybuilder Rob Lipset highlighted a stigma surrounding eating disorders in a YouTube video about his own experience, admitting he really didn't think it would happen to me. This is kind of the dark side of fitness, and it's something that people don't like to talk about, he says. Is my weightlifting going too far? If you're wondering if you've crossed into an unhealthy form of fitness, Shepherd suggests you evaluate the motivations behind your exercise and food habits. If your identity becomes overly tied to your exercise or food, then that would be a time to consider that you have to reevaluate that, she says. Wassenaar says it's helpful to question whether the drive to get your body to a certain size or shape is interfering with your ability to live a more rounded life. If you are forgoing relationships, job responsibilities, sleep, and things like that because you feel driven to work out or driven to be at the gym, then that is a sign of disorder, she says. Nutritional deficiencies, feeling depressed or anxious, and mood changes are more signs things have gone too far. If you suspect your loved one is struggling, Shepherd says the best thing to do is speak up. Lovingly point out that you're concerned that the balance in that person's life is becoming off or out of balance and you're worried about their mental health, she says. Wassenaar admits that this can be a hard conversation, but suggests this phrasing as a potential jumping off point. I'm really worried about you. I see that you're trying to do this thing to make yourself feel better, but it seems like you're feeling worse. I wonder if we can find some help together. Lastly, finding a mental health professional can be crucial in moving toward recovery. That's very interesting. Very interesting. I think people should definitely keep in mind the images that we see on Instagram, on, you know, Facebook, on whatever you use, TikTok. Some of this stuff is filters, and even Joe Rogan said that shit. Like, Miley Cyrus was doing an interview, and she's like, all the girls look way more attractive than me. And he's like, it's bullshit. It's all fucking filters. None of these girls are real. A lot of them are photoshopped. A lot of them are, you know, the peak fitness. Even with the bodybuilder posing and flexing, I really like that one of the girls specifically showed how she looks different, flexing, and how she looks different, normal. You don't see the ripped, defined muscles when they're not flexing them. Sometimes they just look like they have big arms and legs. You'll see a little bit of tone, but you won't see the hyper-defined muscles unless they're doing the special diet, like they're doing contest prep, contest shape. Even Drexel's talked about this. And a lot of guys, they look at the muscle guy and they're like, oh, I want to look like him flexed. Well, you'll only look like him flexed when you flex. There's very few guys, again, it's competition. They have to go under certain, extremely dangerous, by the way, and these are the girls that have told me that. Extremely dangerous things just to get their self to look like that, to have that level of definition right before the show period. It's really dangerous. Lisa Cross has talked about this shit. So yeah, it's a real big deal. And you have to be really, really careful if you're gonna do competition. So, you know, yes, there's a lot of issues there. I'm a fan of bodybuilding, and I understand the risks that they take. And, I mean, that's part of the sport. But I think it is very important to notice bigorexia when it comes to this, because there have been a lot of issues with that. And, of course, you know, that's just as prevalent as anorexia. I don't think it's anything to do with criticizing masculinity or anything like that. I mean, because other bodybuilders are coming against it. Like, hey, yeah, this is an issue. If your diet and you're focusing on your health that much, maybe that is an issue. That could be a problem. I'm not saying not to be unhealthy and not to do bad things. But, you know, you have to... There's a healthy medium. There's always a healthy medium when it comes to this stuff. And even professionals. Like I said, I've talked to professionals. Professionals have told me straight up that yes, this is an issue if it's taken too far. They understand what they got to do for contest prep. But they have off-season and they have on-season. That's another thing that Drexel said. She looks different off-season. She looks different on-season. That is a completely different thing. I believe Drexel has dated women into this. He said he's dated fit chicks before. I want to know that. I personally want that knowledge. I want to know what it was like dating one of these kinds of women. You know, what's the difference between the contest prep and all that stuff? Because you got to understand, like, they got to eat dry chicken or, like, really bland chicken, like, every fucking day sometimes. And it's really crazy. It's been like that for a while because they have to stay to their diet. Like, you eat a cheeseburger in front of them, it's like torturing them. It's too much. You should see how the girls pig out after the fucking competitions. They do, man. They go hardcore. Okay? They go fucking hardcore after these competitions. So do the guys sometimes. You know, it's just how it is. So, yeah. But I don't think this article is shaming any kind of urge to, you know, get big or get muscular at all. But I think it's just telling us that, hey, there is some health restrictions and you want to be careful, you know. You need to be careful with any kind of physical fitness regime that you do. And it always says, used to say, please consult a doctor before getting in any kind of fitness regime. And that's just to make sure that you're, one, healthy enough for that kind of level of conditioning. Because some people are literally not and can hurt them. There's actually issues with somebody losing weight too quickly. It can be really hard on the body. That's why people were kind of criticizing The Biggest Loser. Because it was just telling people to get losing weight too fast. There's a period in which the body loses weight. So you have to be very, 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 very careful with that. Again, all this stuff can be researched. You know, come up with your own opinions here, of course. But, you know, it's just the facts are there. I've talked to the pros. I've seen what the pros have to say. Pros are very dedicated. But they know the risks. That's the thing. They know the risks. And I think anybody in this should know the risks, too. Like, anytime you go lift weights, you know, if you're, like, built like Arnold and you're like, oh, you know, I don't know if my muscles are big enough. Well, that might be an issue. I mean, there's no problem in trying to be the biggest man in the world to be that. But if you feel that you have to, that might be an issue. So be careful because it is a problem. Just like the girls starving themselves to be super ultra fucking skinny. Like, twig skinny. I've seen, like, literal 70, like really skinny fucking girls are trying to be like Instagram model. Oh, she's so skinny. Yeah, it is a problem. Take care of your body. And that sometimes means, you know, like laying off a few days. Like, there's supposed to be times in your workout when you don't work out. Like, there's supposed to be like at least 2 days. And I've got a lot of recommended literature all about bodybuilding. That specifically says you need to take at least a couple days off for your body to heal, you know, because you can't put your body through this, like, ridiculous process all the time, you know. It's, you'd have to give it time. It's got to heal. I mean, that's just, you know, what it is. That's health. But, you know, again, you know, make your own decisions. You run the risks. Everything is risk. Everything in life is risk. Just be aware of the consequences of that risk. Like marriage, overexertion, in anything. You know, just be aware. Too much of anything is never a good thing. So, you know, I think that's a good place to end it tonight. And I'll have more article coverage later. I mean, there's a lot of articles. It's hard to cover all of them. But, you know, I think I'm doing a good job here. And, of course, I have to give the commentary. There is things I'm going to say. It would be boring for me to just read the articles and not say anything. So, I hope you guys enjoyed this. And, we'll have another one. Hopefully, I'll probably do some articles with DP. I know we didn't do some because of the Chris Chan stuff, but we will definitely do articles with him next Sunday. So be aware of that. And anyway, this will be the Grim Lord, and I am out. Later. Enjoy the decline.